From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. As we close out the first half hour together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, and I'll urge you to visit our website at willag.org, willag.org along the way, to find out when our next Will Ag panel is. In fact, it's in the Clark County Extension Office on Wednesday of next week, the 21st, at 11:30 a.m. If you have not yet gotten your invite, should come in the mail shortly. They're going to feed you then, and we'll have a panel of analysts at 12:30, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, Todd Hubbs from here on campus at the U of I, and Sherman Newland at Risk Management Commodities. That's next Wednesday at the Clark County Extension Office in Marshall, Illinois. We open the doors at 11:30 for lunch and follow up at 12:30 with Matt Bennett, Todd Hubbs, and Sherman Newland. Hope you can be with us then and that you'll stay with us this afternoon for this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlow now joins us. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you. Congratulations to the Boilermakers on the first round, Todd.
Hey, there you go. Somebody's going, so that's good. That's good. Hey, the other thing is, thanks for joining us on Commodity Week yesterday. Good show. We'll hear part of it if folks can listen to the whole of the hour here on the Closing Market Report today, over the weekend on many of these stations, and of course online right now at willag.org. I think it was a good show to hear and to do.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's, you know, we're in March Madness in basketball and in the grain markets. And I think it's a real important week next week. The wheat is leading us lower. The hard red went below $5 for the first time since February 26. The Dease corn is now looking vulnerable to testing $4 again. And this goes and flies in the face of the fundamentals that we saw this week. We saw declines again in wheat conditions in Kansas. We saw a marketing year high in the corn. We saw 9 weeks of corn export sales of, I think, 650 million bushels. That's an all-time record. Had great ethanol numbers as far as production. And we held support very nicely in the crude oil as well. But we did not see those things play out in the corn and wheat markets. They, quite frankly, looked a lot like livestock. And I think this is where the funds and the investors are getting a little bit wobbly and shaky in terms of wanting to buy commodities for inflation. So I would request the wheat market to snap back Sunday and Monday and reverse the most of the losses really quickly early in the week, next week, hopefully on less rain than what the trade is expecting from the European model.
Did you put that on a gold card and send it to the CME group?
I sent it straight to the Kansas Wheat Association and the CME and everybody. You bet.
Oh, they'll probably be good with it. So really, what happened? Why is it that we've had two hard down days in wheat? And actually, when you look at it, we've had a whole bunch of down days in wheat from what? Since, I don't know, the third of the month or thereabouts, since the beginning of this month. You would think this thing would be reacting to what's happening out in the Southwest, but apparently not.
Yeah, I think you bring up a huge point. And if you couple that with the fact that the beans were the leader to the upside, they looked super vulnerable, led by the meal at midweek. But look how they look now at the close. We made a new 4-week low in the meal earlier this week, able to close back up above last week's lows and last week's close. And we've got the November beans back to a ratio against the December corn of 2.58. We've rallied almost 2.5% in that ratio in the last 2 days. This all in almost all due to the wheat. So the answer to your question, I think it really goes back to the dollar. I think that the CPI and PPI numbers were not what we needed, especially in the face of a lot of the rhetoric on trade. The livestock markets did not take the news very well this week. The wheat market didn't take it well. Those are kind of your deflationary commodities, if you ask me, because they have ample, if not burdensome, supplies and less weather to bolster them in terms of the supply side, especially given their demand. And so then we got the first quarter GDP numbers from the Atlanta Fed in real time, and they've taken those below 2%, whereas at the end of January, it was over 4%, Todd. And I think finally, one of the sleeper things that really I missed until this morning when I started looking at the gold chart and the bond yields, they were going against the commodity rally. And I looked at some of the news wires, and Kitco had a great wire announcement and report that CNBC had interviewed the new Trump economy point man, Larry Kudlow. He's been around forever, as far as I'm concerned, and he's always been a dollar hawk. And he actually said on CNBC, I'd be long the dollar and short gold, or selling out of gold and buying the dollar. And I missed that on Wednesday. I think that was a biggie, because I think that does point in a new direction, since we do have a new economic team in the White House. So it's not all over but the crying, but we're vulnerable right now. We don't want to lose this rally and the momentum we built up on the funds.
Well, that would put him in line with President Trump, who has long said that he wants a strong dollar. But can they really have that much of an impact? The Fed tends to do what the Fed wants to do.
Well, they can in the short term because of what the Atlanta Fed said, you know, in terms of the GDP. The equities markets and the bond markets are already looking weaker. And what you and I have been talking about is shifting investment flows from the equities over into the commodities. And I think that was very much in play, starting to work as we got into January and early February. That's what concerns me most. As I said on Commodity Week, I'm not as nervous about the supply demand fundamentals for corn, beans, and even wheat at this point. I don't think the downside is substantial at this stage because we're tightening supplies, and we do have weather threats out there, and we have great demand, especially in the corn. And for the, you know, to a lesser degree, the soybeans still. What really shakes the earth underneath me is the deflationary bug and the investors wanting to go ahead and sell commodities in their portfolios and take us down to levels that we shouldn't go to fundamentally. And I saw that this week, first and foremost, in the corn and in the fat cattle.
Hey, about Commodity Week. And of course, you were participating and listening at the same time. And when I go back and listen to it, sometimes it sounds different to me. So when I got done, I would say this was a bullish Commodity Week. However, I would say it was a very cautiously bullish Commodity Week, and maybe more like a friendly caution than the bullish side. What did you make of it yesterday?
Yeah, I thought the same way. I thought everyone had great points. It's all about timing. And I think when I walked away from it, everyone was on the same page that bean acres are going up, corn acres are going down. This week's trade supports that even more at the end of the week. And I think at the end of the day, you have that scenario where beans can't do it alone. You have to have wheat, and you have to have the soy meal market underneath you in order to get those next levels. I think all of us wanted higher levels, but we wanted higher levels to hedge upon. And we were worried that as we got closer to the acreage and stocks report, we'd lose this momentum and not get that higher level to hedge upon. And that then puts you back into, do I sell at break even just to protect my very fragile balance sheet?
So you've mentioned a couple of times the livestock. Are you worried about either the cattle or the hogs?
I am, because of how the funds have treated us since 2014, 2015. When they get a hold of that livestock market, they really tear into it, and they really make it much more volatile and extreme than it should be supply demand wise. So we had six or seven very friendly beef numbers that came out, cash trade, box beef, packer margins, export sales, you name it, we had good news, and yet we really slid all week long. I don't like that, because once they change the momentum to a negative sentiment, then it's very hard to dig yourself out for a couple, 3 weeks.
Finally, what you watching for next week?
I like I said, I've got to get the wheat underneath me. The meal is there as far as supporting the market. The Rotterdam market was up $5 a ton on the week. But I've got to get the wheat underneath me. Otherwise, I'm going to have to get started in the corn hedges just to get some protection underneath me. Because I've committed to producers, I want to get hedged before the March 30th report. I've committed to myself, I don't want to lose $4 futures.
Right. So how do we get wheat back under you if we've got such a big drought, at least at this point, and doesn't look like it's going to be solved very soon in the Southwest, although I suppose that's not impacting the soft breadwinner wheat?
Yeah, I think it's all weather at this stage, or almost all weather, other than the dollar trade. If we could go sideways in the dollar and miss these rains over the weekend and the models for Wednesday dry out, I think the market could change very, very quickly in terms of how they see the wheat crop, because that's where it goes back to. Do we need to take prices lower at this stage? Not if you're still killing the crop. And I think that's what the trade's going to decide tomorrow, next week.
All right. We'll talk with you again in a week. Thanks so much.
Great show as usual. Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Well, it's a Friday afternoon, and we always talk with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible about the weather forecast. He's here today. I think there's been some rainfall in Argentina, Uruguay, some of those southern areas that were suffering a drought in South America. Can you tell me whether it's done much good or not?
Yeah, you know, that's the question. We've seen a couple of fronts that have gone through parts of Argentina in toward Uruguay and southern Brazil in the last couple of days. And just yesterday, we had a big storm system. It was about the size of Uruguay that sat over and dumped an enormous amount of rain. But our question is always, you know, given the time that we are in the season in Argentina, is this going to be a crop saving rain? You know, this is a case of, all right, the rain finally came in, but it was a little bit, you know, it was too late, I think, to have a major impact on helping out that crop. So yeah, you're right. It did rain. We've been talking about it, but it's just not, it wasn't crop saving.
So that brings me to here in the Midwest, because farmers begin to think a lot about the planting season, when they'll be able to get in, because sometimes what happens out west, we end up getting here, and I'm wondering what the shifts and patterns look like.
Yeah, and that's the question to ask. You know, so there's a few things to talk about here. I was getting a lot of folks talking to me and asking me questions about, all right, it's been so wet in the mid-Mississippi River Valley. So I'm thinking here, south of Illinois, you know, getting down into the lower Mississippi River Valley. We've seen 15 inches of rain in Arkansas. Tennessee, Kentucky are soaked. Parts of Missouri are soaked. And the question is, does that have any sort of bearing on what our, you know, what our spring weather is going to be? And so I got a question. Literally, someone says, well, we've heard that, you know, heavy rain in February in Arkansas translates into wet planting season in parts of Iowa and Illinois. And historically, the correlation is practically zero. So we can't really say that that's the case. But I'll tell you this, the pattern that's bringing all that wet weather, we don't see it breaking down anytime soon. So what that means is, where it's really dry right now, like in the Central Plains, over the next 10 days, because the pattern doesn't shift, that's going to continue to stay dry. Where we've been wet, we're going to continue to see it stay wet. And where it's been cool, we're going to see it stay cool. There's nothing that shifts that around. Now, what do we need to see? If you want to get in the fields early, and we got these farmers listening right now, like, hey, I want to get in the fields early. How do we get back to a warm spring? Really, what we have to watch carefully is the Central Pacific and Greenland. So here's what I'll be talking about, you know, with you every Friday. If I start to see a ridge building north of Hawaii, if I start to see cooler weather consistently staying in California, and if I start to see a low developing off the central and southern part of Greenland, that flow pattern tends to give us warmer than average conditions here right now. So what we have right now, the opposite of that, except California. California is getting hammered, but we have the opposite of that in both the Pacific and the Atlantic. We need the whole pattern to shift to the west about 800 miles. And if it does that, then that pattern shift will signify warmer conditions around here through the month of April. But we're waiting to see and trying to watch for these telltale signs of that occurring. And I'll be honest with you, right now, the longer range projections for the cooler pattern, cooler than average, of course, we know we're warming up naturally just because of the seasons, but the cooler than average pattern seems to hang on at least through the end of March for us. So I'm not seeing anything that that suggests that we're going to be warming up anytime soon. But, you know, as we watch that very important planting time period, I would much rather be getting the cooler weather now and the rain now than I would be having it in April and May.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.